answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Nuclear weapon against Iran. You posted on Truth Social a few weeks ago.
We don't need it. Why do I need it? Why would a stupid question like that be asked? Why would I use a nuclear weapon when we've totally, in a very conventional way, decimated them without it? No, I wouldn't use it. A nuclear weapon should never be allowed to be used by anybody.
I've
ever seen. And I hope the media can go over and maybe watch them do it, because I think it's very exciting.
On the war with Iran, how long are you willing to wait until you get a unified response?
Don't rush me, Jeff. Guys like you, you want to say, oh, so we were in Vietnam like for 18 years. We were in Iraq for many, many years. We were in for all the, I don't like to say World War II, because that was a biggie. But we were 4.5, almost 5 years in World War II. We were in the Korean War for 7 years. I've been doing this for 6 weeks.
6 weeks. That is President Trump and being asked a question. And I told you yesterday, I do have concerns every time we give them another ceasefire, because we know what the Iranians are doing behind the scenes and under the ground. Those who want to destroy us and build their nuclear weapons, they continue to rebuild, remount their arsenals the best they can. But again, we have a president who's made it very clear, I want a peaceful resolution. So he's granting another. But that question in the beginning, I don't know if this came from the reporter or some editor said, ask him if he was willing to use a nuclear weapon against Iran. What, as Trump said, a stupid question. We're not going to use a nuclear weapon against Iran. First of all, we have no need to. We have total air superiority over them. We have total naval security over them. There's nothing coming or going that we don't have control over. Do they still exist? Yes, the bad guys still exist inside Iran. And there's part of the problem when it comes to any peace negotiations. Who the hell are we dealing with? Now, Trump said the other day that the most recent calls for a ceasefire at that point came from Pakistan. Can you hold off a little longer? I think we're this much closer to a deal. I don't know if that's a lie or a fact. I don't. But I do know this. Right now, we have troops downrange in harm's way, we do not have more actually at the point of a weapon from Iran, primarily the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. We did seize a ship trying to get through the Strait of Hormuz. Iran claims it fired them on ships themselves. The president did issue an order that any of these small boats they see approaching our naval armada, shoot them out of the air to kill. They may appear to be a fishing boat, but inside they might have a weapon. We're not going to have another repeat of the USS Cole when we allowed a light ship to get next to one of our vessels. That's not going to happen. And anyone who wants to fish in the waters off of Iran right now or just take a pleasure ride on their own little boat, you're kind of stupid. Period. Welcome to hour number one of Larry Connors USA. We're here every Monday through Friday for you from 6 to 8 p.m. And with Larry Connors USA, you're going to get news, analysis, opinion, and education. You're going to leave each hour with more information than you have as we begin the hour. I promise you that. You question me? You listen and see what you know at the end of the hour. Take notes. Take very good notes, because we move at a very fast pace. Let me remind you, even if you're not within our great FM radio signals, you can listen to the program. How do you do that? You get our free app on your phone, Newstalk STL. Download it, listen from wherever you are, and wherever you open up at what time of day, that's the program you get, which would be right now, Larry Connors USA. We also stream video so you can watch the program. How do you watch the program? Again, You go to News Talk STL Rumble, Facebook or Twitter, or you go to Larry Connors USA, Facebook or Twitter. And again, the audio and video are posted for you. I have just one request. If you're going to watch or listen to a podcast later, can I know it's tough to stay with us all the way through? Please do one thing. Share it with someone else. Get more folks involved. We've got listeners all over the nation and beyond U.S. borders that are listening and watching. And I thank you for it. And so do our sponsors. In our next hour, let me give you a preview of what's coming up. In our next hour, the Democrat candidates who hope to replace Newsom, they were asked to give a rating for Gavin Newsom on what he's done. Oh, my God. This guy needed to be graded on a major curve. Wait to hear these numbers. That's in our next hour. Also, Mondami running into more troubles with one of his prize ideas of what he would do for New York City. New Yorkers, and in particular some who voted for him in an area where normally you wouldn't think they would vote, they're saying, no, hell no, we don't want what you're proposing. Oh, and of course, you're going to hear from the leftist legacy media and pundits. The U.S. is suffering. We're suffering. The cost of gasoline and everything else, we're suffering. I remind you again, can you have some spine, some courage? We saw from, the quote, the greatest generation during World War II and other times where the U.S. has been involved in a military action. There might be a rise in cost of fuel from time to time, but it will fluctuate. We're going to get into that more, and we're also going to talk about the different kinds of fuel and why some is going to be more expensive than others. But quit whining and crying while we've got men and women downrange in harm's way. Get a spine, as I said. In our second hour, we have a documentary on the IDF rescuing hostages in Hamas. I'm going to let you hear from the producer of that documentary, a very harrowing experience of what they had to do to get Israeli hostages out of Hamas with no casualties or few. We'll get that story. That's later in this hour, and still later in this hour. The story behind the story. This is a part of the feature at 6 o'clock hour most really like. It's something no one else is doing. And in this case, it relates to the events of today. It was on this date that we tried to rescue our Americans being held in the embassy when they had taken it over in 1979. We made this rescue attempt. It turned out to be not just a failure, not just a disaster, but deadly for Americans. That's coming up later in this hour. Once again, back to President Trump, as he's talking about, we're going to go ahead and grant maybe another 4-6 week extension. It's still up in the air.
Remember this, I want to make the best deal. I could make a deal right now. Do you know that if I left right now, we had a tremendous success. It would take them 20 years to rebuild, but I don't want to do that. I want to have it everlasting. I want to have it where they never have a chance to get it. I mean, the way you asked that question, yeah, I did say it. I thought it would take 4 to 6 weeks, and I was right, because at the end of 6 weeks, at the end of 4 weeks, the military was decimated.
So what are you saying?
But now what I'm doing, I can't tell you that. I don't want to put that kind of a timetable on it, but it'll go pretty quickly. And we'll have the strait opened up. Now, right now, we have it closed. We have total control of the strait. And the fact that it's closed, you know, they would have opened it up 3 days ago. They came to us and they said, we will agree to open the strait. And all my people were happy. Everybody was happy except me. I said, wait a minute, if we open the strait, that means they're going to make $500 million a day. I don't want them to make $500 million a day until they settle this thing.
They have a lot of money being lost every day, $500 million a day. We're going to get into that in more detail in a moment. But let me put something in front of you. Here's the way the leftists and the legacy media are portraying it. My God, we should not be there. We're going to be in another quagmire. And it's going to be fighting and fighting and bodies coming home in coffin bags. Covered coffins, flag draped. And then after the initial shooting and everything, things have quietened down. And now, when are we going to have peace? When are we going to get out of there entirely? Or the question today, when are you going to nuke them? What the hell do they want? They don't know, other than to continually thwart U.S. efforts and attack Donald Trump. And that means America at this point. There's nothing he could do that's going to make them happy. The other issue in dealing with this constant extension of a ceasefire, and I told you, I don't want it to appear to be like Obama when he would draw a red line in the sand for Saddam Hussein and said, you step over that line, we're going to take you. Oh, you're going to step over? Well, we'll redraw a new red line. This is not what Trump is doing. Part of the issue, who the hell is actually negotiating on behalf of Iran? Retired four-star General Jack King.
Well, certainly what happened with the killing of the Ayatollah and the anointing his son as his successor, that immediately produced a power vacuum because his son, even if he's healthy, doesn't have the dominating control and influence that his father had, and his father had it through many years. And also, he's seriously injured, and I think that exacerbates his ability to take control. It's not that he isn't involved, he is. But the power vacuum was filled by the political people, represented most seniorly by Ghalibaf, who's the Speaker of the Parliament, considerably less. More of a spokesperson is the Foreign Minister, Al-Rashi. People think he really has some influence. He doesn't. But the IRGC is the dominating power. And, you know, for our audience, they're a military organization, they're an intelligence organization, they're a special ops organization, and they also run all of the defense businesses themselves. In other words, they're in total control of them. All of them are independently wealthy, travel the world in luxury, etc. Yeah. And they are now the dominant influencing power in the country. And I think there's a general consensus of that. And obviously our CIA and Mossad know the specifics of this, and they're not going to reveal it.
And
that's kind of where we are.
And I would like us to begin to take them out when they go beyond the borders of Iran, when they're traveling around in luxury. Take them out. But the other thing General King pointed out, you can have all this debate as to who's really in control. The IRGC, as he said, they have the weapons.
Let's remove any thought that we are dealing with people who are anything other than hardliners. This guy, Ahmed Vahidi, who's heading the IRGC, he used to command the Quds Force within the IRGC that takes care of our proxies and supports them. He turned that over to none other than Qasem Soleimani. Even the Speaker of the Parliament used to be an IRGC general, and his best friend in life was Qasem Soleimani. They joined the IRGC together, and they went through the ranks. Soleimani stayed in the military route. He went political. So hardliners, for sure, are in control. I think important here to understand, Brett, I think their strategy is this. They believe they took control of the Straits of Hormuz. We went to a ceasefire. In their minds, they stopped the war. And they believe that strategy of taking the Straits of Hormuz and putting pressure on the United States is a working strategy. Our objective was to go to negotiations. Where the Iranians are coming from, they want to play for time. The more time they can drag this out, the more political and economic pressure they believe the United States will feel.
Well, the pressure is increasing. CBN, Christian Broadcast Network, reports we're escalating.
Well, I think Iran's cash drain is a significant issue that they have to deal with very quickly. And I think that's a big motive for them to actually accept a second round of negotiations. Now, the thing is, it's not just, you know, the war that's costing them. Iran's is a loser in this war in every sense of the word and whatever angle you look at it from. Right now, we're seeing a massive effort on behalf of all countries in the region to diversify logistics and methods of transportation and energy flows away from the Strait of Hormuz without any Iranian involvement whatsoever. We're seeing a railroad project done with Turkey, Syria, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia. We're seeing a east to west pipeline by the Saudis. We're seeing the Emiratis investing in Jordan in a railroad that will link it to the port of Aqaba on the Red Sea. And there's so much more. And every way you look at it, it's just money lost for Iran. It's money lost for the IRGC. And the only way they can, you know, try to subvert that is if they get to the negotiating table. But the bottom line is, Iran lost this war. It's the biggest loser. And what you just said with the cash drain and everything else, I think that will accelerate the Iranian people to rise up again.
That's an Iranian expert pointing out, even though bullets are not being fired, Iran is bleeding. And the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is certainly aware of that. We're still winning. And what issues are we winning? Well, Stephen Miller, White House spokesman.
The United States has all of the cards. Iran has none. A military operation could wipe out their energy infrastructure for generations. He's made clear he doesn't want to do that. He wants Iran to choose the right path to make a deal. This embargo is squeezing the economic life out of the Iranian regime, and the United States has the capacity to continue this indefinitely if Iran chooses the wrong path.
Yeah, and they know that. We choose the wrong path, this is going to be bad. And then again, Stephen Miller on the fact of the real issue. We cannot allow Iran to have nukes.
A nuclear-armed Iran, an Iran with medium-range or long-range ballistic missiles tipped with nuclear warheads, is a direct threat to every capital in Europe. We are doing this not only in defense of America, but in defense of the free world. And NATO doesn't want to help. NATO doesn't want to assist. The same NATO that the United States has been subsidizing with our taxpayer dollars for generations, the entire European welfare state was built off the backs of American military might. We invested in our military while they invested in their welfare state. And their long weekends and their long holidays, all paid for by us, by our soldiers, by our Marines, by our airmen, our sailors. And President Trump has said the free ride is over.
It is over. It is over. Coming up, I've got a guest who's been the producer and director of a new movie focusing on the IDF going inside Hamas and rescuing some of the Israelis taken hostage. Fascinating story. That's still to come. And also the story behind the story today, directly tying to where we are right now in Iran. It all started in 1979 when they took over our embassy. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Another day, must be another roofer in town. John Beal and I were talking. He said, you know, every time you turn around, there's a new roofing company. Many of them have no idea what they're doing, and the statistics show that many will be out of business within 2 to 5 years. Who are you going to call to help you then? You need to remember only one name, John Beal. John Beal Roofing. You have a problem, he can take care of it. And we'll be here for you. John Beal Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. Spring weather has everyone sneezing, even inside their home or building. Instead of saying Gesundheit, call Wellington Environmental to perform air tests to determine if mold levels are too high. Gesundheit is the same as saying bless you after someone sneezes, the German word meaning wishing you good health. Wellington Environmental can perform air testing that is simple, fast, and can identify issues keeping you from having good health. Wellington does the same for hospitals and nursing homes for indoor concerns. Give them a call. It's simple. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Tell Cindy, I need air sampling. They've seen it all. They can help you. Next time you hear Gesundheit, think Wellington. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington. True comfort is something you should feel every day in your home. It's the quiet of your mornings, the consistency of your indoor temperature, the way your home feels season after season. With Renewal by Anderson, from consultation through installation, everything is handled by one experienced team, built around your home, your schedule. Our exclusive Fibrex material, stronger than vinyl, built for extreme temperatures. And right now, you can save 20% off your entire project. Plus, take an additional $100 off every window and door, up to $1,000. 20% off the entire project. Flexible financing is available, but you need to call by April 30th. 877-WINDOWS, renewalbyanderson.com. 877-WINDOWS, renewalbyanderson.com. It's that time of season when families, businesses are moving. For local or long distance, I endorse McGuire Moving. Get a date set soon before the schedules are booked. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire is constantly giving back to our veterans, such as support dogs for our brave. So with McGuire, you're getting excellent service and helping our vets. McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL.
Come with me now. Come with me now.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
It was October 7th, 2023. Hamas militants taking 250 hostages, 251 to be precise, from the Gaza Strip. And then there were efforts to try to rescue them. October 7th, 2023 was one of those. A daring high-stakes IDF rescue trying to free at least four hostages inside a refugee camp inside Gaza. There's been a documentary produced about it. The producer and director of Operation Arnon, A Story of Hope and Sacrifice, Hannah Pewter, joining us. Hannah, welcome aboard.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here.
So lay out for us just how dangerous and heroic this was.
Yeah, so Operation Arnon was the culmination of several months of the IDF and Israeli special forces working to create a plan to rescue some of the hostages that had been taken on October 7. Now, I'm sure most people are familiar from news that there were, you know, lots of the hostages held underground in Hamas's tunnels. And after lots of intelligence and data proved that they could possibly have an opportunity to rescue four of the hostages, Noah Argamani, Andrei Kozlov, Almog Mirjan, and Shlomi Siv, because they had been moved above ground into civilian houses. So this made the ripe opportunity to do an extraction and actually bring home some of those hostages that had been, at that point, it was about 6 months into the conflict and no hostages had been successfully rescued.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because this took place June 8th, well after October 7th. And they were going in there, yes, and risking the lives, obviously, to just basically get four hostages. A daylight raid.
Yeah, which is very interesting, right? Because normally for extractions, you know, darkness usually plays in your favor. But no, they went in the middle of the day, executed this extraction, and it was successful. But the amount of forces, and I talked a little bit about this in my documentary, I got to interview Jonathan Conricus, former IDF spokesperson, Amir Avivi, retired brigadier general with the IDF, and they talk about some of the logistics of pulling off an operation like this. And literally thousands of troops were in position and helped execute this. The Israeli Air Force was involved, the paratroopers, ground troops, massive amount of troops to your point, to bring back four hostages.
And let's make it very clear. They're deep inside Hamas territory. Hamas knows at some point the IDF's going to come through the door. They just don't expect it a daylight raid and just for four people.
Right, exactly. The amount of strategy that it took to pull this off in the middle of Gaza. So in the Nuzarat camp, which is a refugee settlement in Gaza, but it's also an area known as a hotbed for Hamas terrorists and sympathizers. And so it was an area where I'm sure they figured the IDF would not go just due to the amount of Hamas forces that were present. But they did. They went in, just as you said, in the day. They went in disguise, got these hostages out. It was a successful operation in terms of rescuing the four hostages. But one of the elements that my documentary talks about, and the operation was later renamed Operation Arnon in memory of the Yamam operator who unfortunately passed due to this operation. He was a breacher in one of the doors.
He breached one of the doors. I want to get into that. You listen to Hannah Pewter, producer and director of Operation Arnon, a story of hope and, yes, sacrifice. It was originally codenamed Seeds of Summer, but it got renamed Operation Arnon. And, again, this was in honor of that chief inspector that breached the door.
Yes. So he was one of the Yamam operators when this plan was initially approached. They came to him. And by the way, all these Yamam operators, for the listeners, Yamam is basically in Israel, their counterterrorism unit. Our equivalency in the U.S. would be kind of like Delta Force.
Right.
But they have basically a national level of counterterrorism special force units. So these are tier one operators. No one was forced to be on this mission. Everyone volunteered. They knew the stakes and they were very aware that they may not come home. When I got the opportunity to interview Arnon Zamora's mother, Ruthie Zamora, she said that Arnon had a premonition that he may not come back.
Yeah.
So these soldiers knew exactly what they were doing, what they were going into. And unfortunately, Arnon did not make it through the mission, but he was on the front lines of the second house that had been infiltrated. And unfortunately, there was a terrorist that they had not initially seen, and he got hit with bullets and did not make it.
Mm. And yet all the others and the hostages came back.
Yes. It's an incredible story. And in my documentary, it goes through some of the details of that operation. Like I mentioned, I have two Israeli officers that are on there giving some of the tactical details. And then also Ruthie and Reuven Zamora, Arnon's parents. You get to hear from their heart and how proud they were of their son and that his legacy lives on, and it will. The operation was renamed after him. But my point in making this documentary was also to honor him and his bravery and what he did that day.
Again, Hannah Pewter is a media professional, more than a decade of experience in film, and as a producer working on numerous documentaries and short-form documentaries as well. But this was a story of courage, sacrifice, precision, and the human cost.
Yes, exactly.
Where is this available for folks to see?
So it's streaming right now on Real Clear Politics, both on their website, their YouTube page, and on X.
So it's obviously available everywhere to see. What's been the reaction from those that have seen it?
People have been really moved because, as I mentioned earlier, I interview Ruthie and Reuven Zamora, and it's a pretty emotional, moving story. You know, if you can imagine someone losing their son and the mixed emotions of the hostages being rescued, which at that point was an absolute elation for Israel.
Sure.
It was a real sign of victory in a very challenging time in their history. But then the mixed feelings of losing your son, right? So there's a lot of mixed emotions, and that comes through in the film, and people find it very moving and encouraging. And I think, you know, we should be encouraged that there are always opportunities of sacrifice and hope, and sometimes they're mixed, those feelings, but it's an amazing story.
And what has been the response of Hamas sympathizers?
So the film only launched 2 days ago. I haven't seen too much reaction from Hamas sympathizers yet, but I'm sure I will.
But don't you find it disgusting, to use the word directly, that they would be praising Hamas for going into Israel, slaughtering innocent people, and then taking hostages back, holding them for days, as it turned out. In fact, for many weeks.
Yeah, there's always this, you know, weird view of what goes on over in Israel. The idea that an enemy would be able to rape, kill, destroy civilian areas, take civilian hostages, and that they remotely deserve justice or a voice or an opinion when they are purely evil, you know, that just doesn't register with me. Hamas is an evil group. They committed atrocious crimes, and it should be reported as such.
And the other thing that comes to mind here, they're just going in this daylight raid. They knew they were only what they expected. They got 4 hostages. All this effort for 4.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it's incredible. It brings to mind the recent rescue over in Iran,
right?
Where the United States executed a similar situation for one person.
Right.
For one of our soldiers. So we have very aligned values with Israel, in that there's this idea of no man left behind. And that's very clearly made evident through Operation Arnon.
I want to thank you again, and please reiterate for the audience how they can watch Operation Arnon.
Yes, Operation Arnon is available on Real Clear Politics, on their website, YouTube, and also on X streaming.
Hannah, I want to thank you. Obviously, an excellent job, and I'm so glad someone told the story. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You bet. Hannah Pewter, producer, director, Operation Arnon, a story of hope and sacrifice. And yeah, there are those out there that will continue to spit in the face of what she did, because they want all Jews to die. And there are many in this nation and some in Congress with such deplorable attitudes. It's sickening. Coming up, the story behind the story. We're still in Iran dealing with them right now, and it all started in 1979. The effort to rescue our hostages, a disaster. That's still to come on The Story Behind the Story.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I want to share something with you. Cooking a pizza using coal creates an amazing pizza. Only one place to get it, Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield. Of course, they offer a wide variety of pasta, but you just visit the website NapoliSTL.com, dine in or take out, and get ready for patio season. Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield Valley. Try it. You can thank me later. So many times, Vincent's Jewelers has helped me surprise someone special. Vincent's locally owned can do the same for you, and you don't have to break the bank to get something really nice, maybe even customized. The smile you're going to get back from that special someone, priceless. Check Vincent'sJewelers.com every day, because new items are arriving and there are special deals. Vincent's, my only jeweler. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Vincent'sJewelers.com. True comfort is something you should feel every day in your home. It's the quiet of your mornings, the consistency of your indoor temperature, the way your home feels season after season. With Renewal by Anderson, from consultation through installation, everything is handled by one experienced team, built around your home, your schedule. Our exclusive Fibrex material, stronger than vinyl, built for extreme temperatures. And right now, you can save 20% off your entire project. Plus, take an additional $100 off every window and door, up to $1,000. 20% off the entire project. Flexible financing is available, but you need to call by April 30th. 877-WINDOWS. Renewal by Anderson.com. 877-WINDOWS. Renewal by Anderson.com. When insurance companies know you're represented by Under Law, they know Under is not going to let you be pushed around. Their reputation is built on years of courtroom battles. If you suffer an injury or damage to your property, serve the insurance company notice. You have Under Law on your side, a St. Louis firm you can trust to protect you at every term. Don't settle for less. You want to win? Believe me, Under wins. Under, O-N-D-R, underlaw.com.
This is News Talk STL.
Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Now, Larry Connors with the story behind the story.
On the 4th of November 1979, Iranian students stormed the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, taking 52 American citizens hostage. As the crisis dragged on into 1980, the Carter administration resolved to rescue the hostages by force. The plan, codenamed Operation Eagle Claw, would be one of the most ambitious special operations America had ever attempted. The concept of the mission was layered and complex. U.S. Special Operations forces would insert into Iran aboard C-130. Aircraft, land in a remote desert location, Desert One, refuel Marine helicopters flown in from the USS Nimitz, then fly together to a hide site outside Tehran. On the second night, the team would infiltrate the city, raid the embassy, extract the hostages, and flee to an airstrip where C-141 Starlifters would fly them out. Every step was dependent on timing, equipment reliability, and precise coordination between multiple military branches.
And that was, of course, as Operation Eagle Claw started forth on April 24th, 1980. Keeping in mind that 1979 is when the mullahs and their student backing, primarily, decided they would take over our U.S. embassy. Things had gotten tense already, but then they decided this is the time to act, and they did. And I remind you, there was a St. Louis in the midst of the embassy. He was there as a Marine guard, Rocky Sickman. But the effort here, as documented by that growing Sidewinder documentary, they were going to do what they could to go in and get them, to get the hostages out. The problem is, it was confusing numbers to how many were actually inside. And that became a bigger issue as they moved closer to trying to get them out, because they thought they had a good number, but they had to make sure that they had plenty of efforts to get everyone out. We didn't want to leave anyone behind, right? Obviously not. And it was, as you heard, codenamed Operation Eagle Claw.
On the night of April 24th, 1980, a formation of C-130 Hercules aircraft sliced silently through the black void above eastern Iran. Their destination was an anonymous stretch of desert codenamed Desert One. Their mission was one of the most daring and ambitious special operations in American military history, a rescue operation to extract 52 U.S. hostages held in Tehran. The plan was intricate, risky, and fraught with uncertainty.
Yeah, because he did not know what would happen. It's a desert region. It was the only reason they decided that they could put these C-130s down. The C-130s were critical because the hostages were going to be lifted out of the embassy by helicopters. But the helicopters, after they arrived, had to be refueled. So these were C-130s equipped with special bladder tanks to supply numerous helicopters. But, of course, they had to land and get in position and be ready. And it was dark. They had no way to know for sure where we are. There was no landing strip. None. Listen to the CBS documentary.
53 Americans were being held hostage by Iranians who seized the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. And President Jimmy Carter ordered a mission to rescue them.
Personally, I didn't think we had much of a chance. But that was my personal opinion, which I did not voice. Because clearly, when the President of the United States says, go, you go.
Yeah. Wade Ishimoto was a member of Delta Force, a hostage rescue team led by a charismatic Army colonel, charging Charlie Beckwith.
You either loved him or you hated him, and sometimes you did both on the same day.
Beckwith and his force of 123 men, looking pretty scruffy for a military unit, took off from an isolated airstrip in Egypt. Beckwith has since passed away. Jerry Boykin was one of his squad leaders. Bucky Burris was his deputy.
Colonel Beckwith gave us a pep talk. Jerry Boykin got up, led us in prayer, and then I led us in singing God Bless America, and off we went.
And off we went. The beginning was a C-130 Hercules to get in place and be ready for the helicopters when they came.
C-130s were tasked with the initial insertion, three MC-130E combat Talon aircraft specifically modified for special operations carried Delta Force commandos, Army Rangers, translators, and CIA personnel. These aircraft were designed for low-level, long-range infiltration and were equipped with terrain-following radar and advanced navigation systems for the time. Five EC-130Es acting as aerial fuel trucks followed behind carrying enormous internal fuel bladders. These were crucial for refueling the RH-53D Sea Stallion helicopters that would carry the assault team to Tehran. The Hercules crews faced a daunting flight. Departing from Mazara Island off the coast of Oman, they would fly 1,000 miles across the Gulf of Oman and into the Iranian interior. They flew at low altitude, often below 500 feet, to avoid detection by Iranian radar. This required immense focus, especially at night. And in a pre-GPS era, navigation was accomplished using inertial navigation systems and paper maps. Turbulence, fatigue, and the ever-present danger of surface-to-air missiles made the journey harrowing. Their destination, Desert One, was nothing more than a flat section of the desert. There were no runways, no lighting systems, and no margin for error. Combat controllers had infiltrated the site days earlier to install infrared beacons and chemical lights to guide the aircraft in. The landings had to be precise, silent, and completely blacked out. One mistake and one aircraft could overshoot, hit another plane, and be lost in the desert. Despite the difficulty, the C-130s landed flawlessly. One by one, they touched down on an improvised landing zone in the darkness. They began offloading equipment, setting up fuel lines, and preparing for the helicopters. Desert One came alive as a temporary forward operating base in the middle of nowhere, supported by nothing but the Hercules aircraft that carried it in. The vehicles, communication gear, fuel drums, and support personnel spread out and assumed their positions. It was a remarkable feat of precision and discipline.
It wasn't amazing.
Long before things started to go wrong.
It was amazing, but there was that thing that was going to go wrong. You heard him say they were taking fuel lines, leading them off from the tankers, putting them at a distance where the helicopters could land and refueled on the ground. And then came the next phase.
The plan depended on 8 RH-53D Sea Stallion helicopters making their way from the USS Nimitz to Desert One. Only 6 arrived. One had turned back due to mechanical issues, another was caught in a sandstorm and returned to base. A third made it to Desert One but was found to have an inoperative hydraulic system. That left 5 helicopters, one short of the minimum required to complete the mission. A decision loomed. Should the mission proceed with too few helicopters, risking mission failure and hostage casualties, or should it be aborted and risk exposing America's entire covert operation? Colonel Charlie Beckwith, commanding officer of Delta Force, recommended the latter. The operation was called off. Then, disaster struck. As the teams prepared to withdraw, one of the helicopters attempted to reposition in the blinding dust. Visibility was near zero. The RH-53 drifted into the path of a parked EC-130, fully loaded with fuel. The helicopter's rotors clipped the aircraft's wing, triggering a massive explosion. Fire erupted immediately, engulfing both aircraft in flames. 5 Air Force crew members and 3 Marines were killed instantly. Several others were badly injured. The surviving C-130 crews worked quickly, loading the wounded and remaining operators into the aircraft. They lifted off into the night, leaving behind the burning wreckage, abandoned helicopters, and valuable equipment. The mission had not only failed, it had ended in death and exposed America's most secretive capabilities.
And they also left behind bodies, which is something no military wants to do, not the U.S. military. We're going to deal with that a little bit later. And President Carter, after all the troops were safely out of Iran, he addressed the nation about the failed mission. So yes, there is more to the story behind the story.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Do you know why I endorse Cafe Napoli? All the locations? Visit any of them and you will quickly appreciate the quality of food, service, atmosphere. So maybe I'll see you at Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Napoli Kirkwood, Napoli 2 in Town and Country, Napoli 3 in St. Charles, right next door to Napoli C. Or maybe you'll find me at Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in the Chesterfield Valley. Now you know why I endorse Napoli. NapoliSTL.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Now, the end of the story behind the story.
With the steady unraveling of authority in Iran and the mounting dangers that are posed to the safety of the hostages themselves, and the growing realization that the early release was highly unlikely, I made a decision to commence the rescue operations plans. This attempt became a necessity and a duty. The readiness of our team to undertake the rescue made it completely practicable. Accordingly, I made the decision to set our long-developed plans into operation. I ordered this rescue mission prepared in order to safeguard American lives, to protect America's national interest, and to reduce the tensions in the world that have been caused among many nations as this crisis has continued. It was my decision to attempt the rescue operation. It was my decision to cancel it when problems developed in the placement of our rescue team for a future rescue operation. The responsibility is fully my own.
And yet, in the field, the commander of the unit at that point said, we cannot carry out the mission as scheduled. We need 8 helicopters to put everyone on board. One helicopter had to turn back early because of mechanical issues. One had to abandon as they approached the sand, couldn't see clearly enough to land. Another one had problems. They were down to 5 helicopters. But Jimmy Carter, like him or hate him, he took full responsibility, as he should, as commander-in-chief, and knowing that his decision cost American lives, but trying to save others.
With the steady unraveling of authority in Iran and the mounting dangers that were posed to the safety of the hostages themselves and the growing realization that the early release was highly unlikely, I made a decision to commence the rescue operations plans. This attempt became a necessity and a duty. The readiness of our team to undertake the rescue made it completely practicable. Accordingly, I made the decision to set our long-developed plans into operation. Our auditors' rescue mission prepared in order to safeguard American lives, to protect America's national interest, and to reduce the tensions in the world that have been caused among many nations as this crisis has continued. It was my decision to attempt the rescue operation. It was my decision to cancel it when problems developed in the placement of our rescue team for a future rescue operation. The responsibility is fully my own.
I want you to hear that again, because that is a commander-in-chief acknowledging it was my decision. What had gone wrong? Well, they had landed near a road, and there's some vehicles that started coming down the road. And they tried to stop them, but then one of the ones they tried to stop blew up.
With a mission scrubbed, the rescue force had to get out of Iran as fast as possible. Jim Schaefer started moving his helicopter away from a C-130.
Not realizing that the air traffic controller guy on the ground was getting dust so bad into his mask that he was backing up. As he backed up, he was getting closer to the C-130, and I didn't realize I was kind of drifting sideways to the right.
Schaefer's rotor blade sliced into the C-130.
And the next thing I know, we were on fire and on the ground.
Three Marines, including his crew chief, were in the back.
He said, "I need some help." And I remember reaching back and holding his arm, and I heard this horrible scream, and he let go.
Schaefer dove out his window to the ground, but part of Delta Force was trapped in the back of the burning C-130. Somehow, they all got through a single door and escaped through the flames.
It looked like something from a movie. They looked like they were walking out of hell.
Eight Americans were killed. Five crew members of the C-130 and three in the back of Schaefer's helicopter. Their bodies left behind.
The fire was so intense, we knew it would be at least a couple of hours before it burnt out. So the tough decision was made that we have got to leave those bodies behind.
They really had no option. The remains of those eight American servicemen killed were returned by Iran 11 days later, flown to Switzerland and then to the U.S. So they did come home. And 8 months later, after all this had taken place, Iran decided to release all the hostages being held at the embassy, including Rocky Sinkman of St. Louis and others. Monday, our story behind the story, when skyjackings were first beginning. Do some of you remember that? We're not talking about where it led to a crash into the World Trade Centers. We're talking about the original skyjackings. That's our story behind the story tomorrow. Second hour still to come. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.
Podcast of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
John Bill Roofing reminds you we are in the stormy season, and that means if you have even the smallest leak in your roof, you could soon have a much bigger issue. Call the John Bill to make sure that your biggest investment is protected. That call can save you major dollars. If you do get hit during a storm, John Beal has a rapid response team. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 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 John Beal. There's only one place you can get pizza cooked over coals. Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield Valley. Of course, Napoli Brothers has a great selection of pasta dishes. Between the pizza and pasta, trust me, you will not leave hungry. Then, a few doors down, Lit Cigar Lounge. A wide variety of quality cigars, each offering a unique smoke. That cigar, some premium whiskey, all you need to do is enjoy. Lit Cigar Lounge and Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta. Chesterfield Valley. It's that time of season when families' businesses are moving. For local or long distance, I endorse McGuire Moving. Get a date set soon before the schedules are booked. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire is constantly giving back to our veterans, such as Support Dogs for Our Brave. So with McGuire, you're getting excellent service and helping our vets. McGuireMoving.com. So many times, Vincent's Jewelers has helped me surprise someone special. Vincent's locally owned can do the same for you, and you don't have to break the bank to get something really nice, maybe even customized. The smile you're going to get back from that special someone, priceless. Check Vincent'sJewelers.com every day because new items are arriving and there are special deals. Vincent's, my only jeweler. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Let's be candid, honest. No out-of-state law firm can represent you better than Under Law. O-N-D-E-R. Hometown roots, attorneys living right here with you and your family. When you suffer an injury because someone else was negligent, Under Law will make sure the other party takes full responsibility. You'll get full compensation, not a backroom deal worked out with some insurance companies. And of course, we're moving into the stormy season. And again, when you have a legitimate claim, you should be properly compensated. Under Law does not toy around with adjusters, investigators, lawyers trained to cheat you of what is rightfully yours. Under Law has already recovered millions for families across Missouri and Illinois. Under wins. Not just a catchy phrase, it's a fact. So I'll repeat it. Under wins. Underlaw.com. O-N-D-E-R. Underlaw.com. Wins.
This is News Talk STL.